Camp coverage on the Fan is presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. Grant and Danny out and about at Nationals Park today. Hey, we got to wish our guys Kondori and Murad a congratulations. 10-year anniversary as a law firm.
Oh, that's awesome.
I saw them post on social media yesterday, so job well done to them. They sponsor this show. You can schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. If you need last will and testament or a living trust or a medical power of attorney, any of those things, kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you to get a discount at kmlawyers.com. Let's go to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, and welcome onto the show, Michael Jannetty of SpotTrac, who had, I thought, a very on-brand and kind of compelling case he made today on the Terry McLaurin front, put together a contract that would work potentially for both sides. It seems like, you know, it's right where this thing's going to end, and he's got all the details on how it would look. Michael, thanks for joining us on the Fan. How are you?
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Good.
You got it. So the deal you came up with here was 3 years and $82.5 million, which was a little over 27 per. So how did you get there, and why does that feel like a potential landing spot for the exercise?
Yeah, so that's actually his mathematical value within our structure. So the 27.5 has sort of been the number that we've been bouncing around internally here with him for a while. And, you know, I know that counteracts with the $30 million-plus that other wide receivers around his age have been getting, and certainly what he's been saying out loud. But that's sort of where fair market value says he should be. And I think this late in the game with the team basically putting their foot down this long, that's going to be the going rate, right? It's not going to be an overextension at this point in time. It's going to be all or nothing in terms of that fair market value price.
So, Michael, my sense has been, and you could tell me if you think I'm off base here, that I think the team would probably go for that. I don't know that Terry McLaurin and his agent would, just kind of given their eye line. Give me your thoughts there.
Yeah, that's exactly why I published this today, right? Is there's only probably one version of this that the team itself would say yes to right now, and that is fair market value. So, to go above and beyond that would be a cave from the team's perspective, and they just don't need to do that because, you know, unlike some of these other holdout situations, there's a world where, enough people internally probably think near $20 million for McLaurin this year is a good number from a cash perspective. And then next year is obviously up in the air. But, yeah, that's the fair market price is exactly where the team's going to be. And we've seen that a couple times now with contending teams, a couple of Buffalo extensions, certainly some things that have happened in Kansas City over the past couple of months. You're just not going to get too much past that point when you're within a system that is vying for a Super Bowl right now.
So what's baked into your number? And the reason I ask that is the argument the team and the agent have had, and the reason for this impasse, is the team is saying age, 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 age. And the agent is going years, years, years. Like, he's going, I don't care if he's about to be 30. He's going into year 7. And guys get paid going into year 7. And the team's going, well, year 30, age 30 is what matters here. So I'm wondering, like, how do you – bake that and bring it out at that number, and how do those things factor in?
Yeah, there's a few factors. Obviously, age is one of them, and certainly the age itself, when factored mathematically, is drawing this number downward, just naturally, and because that's the going rate, right? When wide receivers hit this mark, it's just an actual fact. There's data to it that we plug in behind it that says that the number will be going down at this point in time unless you're a 1A tier 1 unicorn, which mathematically Terry McLaurin is not, unfortunately. So, and the other side of this is just raw data, raw stats, analytics, some premium stuff that comes in from the backside. And he's doing very well in that regard, obviously. Otherwise, this would be closer to $20, $21 million, which is where Cortland Sutton recently landed in Denver, which I know is a contract that the McLaurin camp is pushing away from quite a bit here. So he does have some distance in that regard in terms of statistical production, but there's no question that the second you hit 30 at this position, the mathematical value of your worth is going to come down.
Michael Jannetty, SpotTrac. You can check him out on social. Great insight on contracts. And anytime a big deal in sports is signed, he's one of the first accounts I go to. Danny asked you a little bit more on the side of, you know, what the team had offered. What the player had wanted and how far off that is. I want to go to what the team had offered. $27.5 million and the difference between that and what we've been told reportedly is they want to be down closer to 24, 25, and they may have even started lower than that. What about that side of it? Do you think that was where they should have begun the negotiation?
Well, the contract I put out today, yes, is $27.5 per year, and it's a four-year contract, right, a three-year extension. But from a guarantee perspective, it's 2 years, $50 million. So I've got it right at that $25 million per year mark over the next 2 years, and then basically everything after that is completely up for grabs in terms of the guarantees and the ability to get out of it. So I think these numbers themselves kind of hit all notes, which is his actual value within our algorithm and what the team has been saying out loud they're willing to do. And it just comes down to his player and his agent and his camp willing to accept essentially a two-year contract, knowing that after that it's going to be pretty hard from an open market standpoint to cash in again.
Michael Jannetty, SpotTrac, with us here on Grant and Danny, breaking down a potential Terry McLaurin deal. Michael, go into this for me, and forgive my ignorance. You've forgotten more about this stuff this morning than I'll ever know. But to me, the thing I care about, not necessarily the cash for the player, I don't want to be in anyone's pockets, I care about cap hit for the team, right? So if somebody gets a bunch of cash and it doesn't affect the salary cap, that's great for me. To me, it's all about building the team and the roster. Why the structure that you have does that cap hit jump in year three and year four without kind of what looks to me like an easy off-ramp there if it's really about the 2 years, $50 million guaranteed? Does that make sense?
Yeah, so what I've done here is I've added two big bonuses, a signing bonus this year and then a signing bonus next year as an option bonus. And that allows things to be spread out and pushed down the line, right? This is the essentially building in the contract restructure in front, like teams like Philadelphia and some others do. So I'm doing that prospectively right now because I know this team is looking to build aggressively every offseason. They've done so this past. They're going to do it again next March. So you temper the current cap hits. You deal with the larger cap hits later. And like I said, after 2026, this contract that I projected here is basically thrown out the window from Washington's perspective. So it's about dealing with both cap friendliness today and cash in hand for the player right now today, and everything else is basically just we'll see when we get there.
Essentially, they could tag him next year at 29, and then he's under contract this year. Would they be saving money, 2 and 50 or whatever that accounts to on this deal from that? The reason I ask is, if they're not, would they even be willing to do this?
It's a great question. It's a great point. I think that franchise tag next year is going to be pretty high. I really do. I really think the mathematics, when it's all said and done with these top five salaries, is going to be upwards of, you know, mid-30s. So, when you put the math with his 19 and change this year with that 30, you're approaching, right, the $50 million that we're projecting here. So, again, I had that in perspective here when I put the numbers together, and you want that to be as close as possible because you want to be able to poo-poo any of the arguments that the agent's going to make, and that will be a big one, especially with, you probably want this player around for not just this year but also next year, knowing that you have the value on Jaden Daniels for the next two seasons.
So, Michael, again, forgive my ignorance. I've seen that projected cap, franchise tag number, rather, in the high, $28, $29 million for next year. Why the difference? Why will it be much higher than has previously been thought?
Well, two things. We're going to have a couple more extensions here, which I think will factor in before the cutoff date actually gets here. And then, of course, wherever the salary cap jumps next year, and that'll trickle down. So if the salary cap comes in higher than we think next year for 2026, and I do think it could be upwards of $300 million, maybe even over $300 million, you'll see those numbers really significantly go for these premium positions, which by all accords the wide receiver has become over the past five off seasons here with ridiculous amount of signings.
SpotTrac, Michael Jannetty giving us some numbers on Terry McLaurin. So what is the recourse for him? I mean, everything points to him not really having leverage, the team holding all the cards. You're looking at this from a very statistical, numerical, unbiased perspective, and you're going 27.5 is about as good as he's going to do. What are we missing? How is this going to end any other way?
He's going to have to cave, right? And unfortunately, I try to put this on both sides as much as possible, but I really do think that team has most of the leverage here heading down to the wire as we're about a week away here from this all coming together. He's going to have to come down basically to this point, which is I'm willing to be here for 2 years. I want to be here for 2 years, fully guaranteed. And that $25 million per year in terms of the guaranteed average is going to get it done for me. If he's not willing to do that, if his camp is not willing to compromise in that regard, like I said, I think you agree with me, I believe the team thinks he will step on the field with his current contract and play out that contract, and we'll see where we get to next February and March. So it's one of those situations that I wouldn't say with the other holdouts exists, where the team has so much leverage. This is one of those where I swing towards the Washington Commanders pretty heavily.
So that's interesting. I mean, there are a couple things on that, Michael. We're in a different era now where, you know, the agent, whoever the agent is, will text Adam Schefter. You know, and it's like, the contract was negotiated by Steve Smith or whatever, and now we're, like, supposed to care about that and all the different things because everybody wants to spike the football. Where would their spike the football be in that deal that you're talking about where it makes it seem like all this was worth it? You know what I'm saying? Like, every agent's got to do that. They've got to show that we won this thing somehow, even though I wouldn't view that as a win objectively. Where would their ability to do that be in this deal in your mind?
That's a phenomenal question. And with NFL contracts specifically, there are ways to do this, right? Because there's so much, I don't know, fluff, right? Broadcasting, marketing built into these things. Mm-hmm. The way to do it is if you look at my contract and you look at the bottom two salaries, which already you mentioned the cap if they're bloated, there's some bloatedness there, is you add to that, right? And maybe you even add an extra year to this thing, make it a four-year extension, and you allow yourself to pump in some really, really bloated salaries down the line, which in turn gets that average salary, that APY, over $30 million. And then you're able to go back and put out to the Schefters of the world and say, look, we got Terry McLaurin $30 million a year when, you know, anybody who looks at this stuff with a closer magnifying glass understands that the two years guaranteed is really all that matters here. So that's generally what you're going to see happen is you're going to see a bunch of funny stuff added to the back end of this thing to make the marketable numbers sound better. But there's just no way that a team like Washington can give in too much with the next two seasons, knowing how important it's going to be from a contention standpoint.
Michael Jannetty of SpotTrack with us. Last thing for me, and I know you deal specifically with the contracts part of it, but the fines element of this is interesting to me. And I don't know how that works in with your side of it, but when he was holding out, it's pretty easy. It's $50,000 a day. Every day he doesn't show up. It's $811,000 for every game he misses, preseason, regular season. It gets a lot more murky with a hold-in, especially with him being on PUP, because now the team has the ability to not fine him, and it's based on conduct detrimental and whatever else. But what's your thought on if he really even has a possibility of missing any game time, or if that would – is there even a path for the agent to say that somehow that could help him with his leverage to miss games?
It gets really, really funny once the season starts, right? Because at some point in time, the team can actually run the test and put the data out there that says that this is he's healthy enough to be playing and he's just refusing to play. And the second that becomes a thing, now you're talking about a breach of contract, right? And it gets really ugly and really nasty. And generally, sides don't want to get to that point, but I think we're headed in that direction with Trey Hendrickson in Cincinnati, without a doubt. And, you know, it's not an accident that we're hearing so many singular reports from Washington stating that, you know, Terry McLaurin is simply in a conditioning position right now, and he's starting to ramp up, and he's getting very close. And those words are happening because of what we're talking about here, which is they believe he will be active, healthy, and ready week one. And if that's not the case, they don't plan on, you know, losing out on their end of the bargain here. So I have a feeling if he believes he can hold out or hold in without any ramifications, the team may be thinking otherwise here.
Michael, not hyperbolic. I literally use your website every single day. Thank you for that. Thank you for this great work and appreciate you joining us, man. Thanks.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
It's Michael Jannetty of SpotTrack with us on Grant and Danny. Really good insight on Terry McLaurin. How about the position that throws him the football, quarterback news today for the Commanders from practice. We haven't had a lot of detail on what's going on with Marcus Mariota. He's just been unable to practice. Early on, it was kind of no-sold, and it was like, oh, he's dealing with a leg thing. Oh, we're being precautious. Well, today he did talk with the media, and apparently he's got an Achilles issue. Sounds minor. He's expected to be back for week one, but this was Marcus Mariota, QB2, talking with the media.
The entire staff, like, we all got on the same page, and just appreciate the fact that they were willing just to kind of let me take some time to get it right.
So you think you're going to go for week one?
That's the plan, yeah. So I'm kind of in that process to return to play, and part of that process is to come out here, start doing individual work, and then slowly get kind of acclimated into the team setting. And then once that happens, then I can be full going, and I should be ready by week one.
Should be ready. That's the plan. Different than I will definitely be ready week one, but he clearly thinks he's got an opportunity to be. But Josh Johnson, congratulations. Yeah. You just made the team.
Two things. One, I am over the phrase return to play. I didn't know that would bother me. I now am. I've had enough of that. Not mad at Marcus Mariota or anybody specifically, but I'm good on that phrase. Second part is this is kind of the unfortunate or unlucky part about the way the football calendar works. There have been a few of these where we're just sitting here going, yep, we got no idea. We got no clue what's going on with Noah Brown or Marcus Mariota or some of these other guys that are just either not practicing or out of sight, out of mind. Or
they're in regular season mode with injury info.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times training camp is more enlightening when, you know, whether it's Quinn, the head coach, or whoever. They're kind of doing hockey injury style.
Like, yeah.
Mariota's got a leg. Well, he's got Achilles tendonitis and maybe or maybe not ready for week one. I mean, right. He makes it sound like he will be, but I guess you got to take that with a grain of salt. But Josh Johnson was competing with Sam Hartman for the third job. He's run away with that competition and left Sam in his wake, as far as I'm concerned. So I feel good enough, honestly, about how Johnson could operate the offense in a backup role. But this would be a significant problem if something does happen and Mariota is out for any extended period of time. Let's not forget, he did play in multiple games last year. Now, one of them was week 18 when they were sitting starters because they were playoff bound. But he shined. He was great against the Panthers. They scored 40 points. Their offense did not miss a beat when he came onto the field early in that game after the Daniels rib injury right at the start of the contest. And then they were playing their worst offensive game of the year against Dallas, and Mariota came in, and the offense actually got better in the second half with him, you know, leading them to the come-from-behind victory. So the couple of times we have seen him, he has been able to run this thing clinically. And he's become important, I think, in this room.
Yeah, he is the like that role is perfect for him. Like if you play 16, 17 games, I've seen that. I kind of know what it's going to look like. The wrinkles, the warts, the issues, the problems. But it's just enough backyard football. Think of that great run he had against Dallas where I think the safety wasn't even looking where he was still peeking into the backfield as he was just, you know, by his butt.
It's like ripped off like a 30-yard run for a first down.
Huge moment. Again, of course, a touchdown to Terry McLaurin to win that game. But a number of things that you saw from him in short samples, that's exactly where he should be, right? Where it leaves you wanting more because, again, the bigger sample is not going to be kind to him. But that size where you can come in and play a little hero ball, make some athletic plays, make, you know, some of the throws that that Daniels can, that to me is the perfect role for that guy. So, yeah, they'll miss him if he's not able to go or something happens if that Achilles gets worse.
The big story about Daniels coming out of LSU with his size and frame was, is he going to be able to take the NFL shots and the pounding and the beating at his size, leaving the pocket as a runner? And he was able to. Now, he did have the one kind of fluky. It wasn't even really that a frame issue, I don't think. It was he got tackled at the end of a play against the Panthers where his rib broke. But for the most part, we've stopped talking about his durability because he got through a game where he played 17 contests, probably should have played, I don't know, 13 or 14 and just missed some time with a broken rib, but played through it very, very tough and admirably. I give him a lot of credit for that. But on Mariota, if he's not able to be ready in week one, let's just say, you know, he's ready for week two, although that's Thursday after Sunday. So if you're not ready week one, you might not be ready week two. But if the beginning of the year, there's still something not quite right and you're healthy enough that you're not going on PUP or anything, it's not like they're not IRing you for four games that you're going to miss, but he's not available, now all of a sudden Josh Johnson is a play away from being on the field. It's just a very different feel.
Yeah, it's a different eye line.
Where
yeah.
all you need is the wrong kind of contact of Daniels. It happened in week one against the Bucks last year, and now someone in the red hat says you got to go to the blue tent, and Josh Johnson's leading you on an important drive.
I mean, was it week two against the Giants? We got his helmet spun talking about Daniels. You know, like, again, we were precariously close a number of times to way more catastrophic things, and I'm, you know, be holding my breath every time he does something like he did against Cincinnati in the preseason.
And my point is always quarterbacks don't get to choose if they come on or off the field.
Right.
This QB series I love on Netflix. In the playoffs against Washington, I'd actually forgotten this happened, but when Jared Goff threw that pick six at the end of the half.
And Frankie Louvu lit him up.
Oh, Frankie Louvu just murderballed him, knocked him into next week, right? Goff comes over, he's like, Louvu got me, Louvu got me. And you could tell he's fine, but he's salty about the play and getting drilled.
Probably hurt.
But they come over and they go, hey, you got to go to the blue tent to get tested. He's like, no, I'm good. They're like, no, this isn't a choice. Like, you're going to the blue tent. He's like, I'm not missing any time. And they say, get over there and get it done as soon as possible. And he basically told him, he's like, hey, I'm going to keep playing. I'm telling you right now, I'm fine. Get the next drive together for me or whatever. And it turns out that Teddy Bridgewater had to come in. They scored a touchdown on the first play because it was the end around to Jameson Williams,
yep,
where he went and scored in what was the craziest first half of a playoff game in all of January. But I bring that up to say, like, that's all it takes,
yep,
is just you get dinged or someone in the booth thinks you got dinged or thinks you need to be checked, and now it's not up to you anymore, and you might miss a drive or two or, unfortunately, longer than that. And again, it's not something you control. You can't just be tough. This isn't Brian Mitchell 15 years ago getting knocked out cold by Curtis Buckley on a tackle and just returning a kick later in the game. Like, there's too much intel, too much information, and it's taken out of your hands now.
Mm-hmm.
And so the backup quarterback, especially when you've got a dual threat who's going to run around and make plays with his feet and basically take on extra contact out of the pocket, it's a vital role. Last year they got a gigantic plus mark from Mariota. You need him healthy and available for the majority of this season. He's a sneaky, significant, really pivotal piece.
You laid out the case really well. I mean, that's what it is, right? It's the, you're, even if it's not, okay, he's got to start this week or going to play a whole half, it's three plays or four plays in you know, these games that are so hotly contested and so close. Yeah, it is an important role for anybody, you know, let alone a non-Brett Favre-type team where the guy played for, whatever, what was it, 300-some consecutive games. For a guy that's going to run around and move like that, for sure, you need a backup.
All the more reason, by the way, not trying to be mean, but I don't think Sam Hartman could be your number three. Because if Mariota's not available, your three becomes your two.
Your three becomes, yep.
I mean, you've seen the first two preseason games like I have.
I have indeed.
Can he be a play away from playing right now? I would just shut that down.
I don't want that. And again, I'm rooting for the guy. I fell in love.
Keep him in the building.
He was a high school kid, just, you know, barely. Hey, he's going to go to Wake Forest. I remember that from the you know, whatever, the QB1 Netflix show for the high school kids. That's where I, you know, first discovered him and Justin Fields and how I'm like rooting for these guys. But yeah, I can't do that at number three.
We will get you the leadoff ahead of Nationals baseball, a day game today on the Fan. We'll hit the headlines as well as soon as we return on Grant and Danny from Nats Park. Kobe Altizer says he can move his arm forward, his left arm forward. He just can't stretch it out, and it's a 6.5 pain out of 10. That update on how Toby's arm is feeling after his workout with Danny is presented by Paramount Plus. Mm. You can't count on much these days other than Danny making people puke when they work out.
That guilt is brought to you by Paramount Plus.
But you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started. Danny, it is time for the leadoff. Pregame with Charlie and Dave just minutes away. The leadoff. Every day ahead of Nats baseball comes your way via the Window Man since 1989, year after I was born. The Window Man's been the educational window company. Get your free in-home estimate or visit thewindowman.com's all-new Fairfax showroom.
Opposite Sean Manea, Mackenzie Gore on the bump, leading off your DH. That's James Wood batting second. Shortstop, see? Check. Abram is batting third at second base. Paul DeYoung batting fourth at first base. Andres Chaparro batting fifth. Your catcher, Riley Adams, batting sixth in right field. Dylan Cruz batting seventh in left. Daylon Lyle, Brady House at third base, batting eighth. And Jacob Young in center field, batting ninth.
Headlines from the NFL on our way out here. Shedeur Sanders will play this weekend for the Cleveland Browns, so he's back healthy. He and Dylan Gabriel have both actually played very well and looked good. Shedeur Sanders downplaying the Dylan Gabriel remark on the sideline where he said some people are entertainers, others have to go out and compete, I'm a competitor. This was taken as some gigantic shot at Shedeur Sanders. No one watched the question. The question was about the media and people that are, you know, asking questions of him. He was saying some people are trying to entertain and ask questions, others play football, basically. This was turned into something it was not at all.
Yeah, the context certainly matters there. I mean, you could see the backdrop in a vacuum, right, where you go, oh, my God, he's taking a shot at
But it's so unacceptable not to, like, as soon as you hear the question in the context, it should be over. It's done.
Right.
There's nothing else to talk about. I can't believe that Shedeur Sanders today was still being asked about the slight from his teammate.
Agreed.
He should have come out and said, are you kidding me? That's not what he was saying at all. Listen to the question. Kind of downplayed it and said, oh, we're fine. Nothing to see here. But I am curious to see him back on the field because he looked pretty sharp in his first out.
Yes, he did. Athletic, explosive, good arm. Again, didn't look like a fifth rounder to me.
We're getting ready for baseball on a chilly, wet, feels like an October play-in game kind of temperature out here at Nationals Park. We're handing the torch over to the voices of Nats baseball next, Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler. Thanks to Darris back in studio, Toby out here at Nats Park with us, Ryan wherever he is, Grant and Danny saying so long from the crew. We're back at it at 2 tomorrow.
Thank you for coming.